I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
Trying to make structural reforms that make these programs stronger and make them be able to actually last and be there for the people who need that assistance. We want these to be, we want them to be safety nets, not hammocks that people yeah. stay in, but getting people on their feet so that they can achieve the American dream. That's what they were intended for. And Jake, that's what we have an obligation to do, is preserve them for the very people who they were meant to serve.
You know, Katie Britt is just great. And, you know, she did this interview with State of the Union, Jake Tapper on CNN. It's not this past weekend, but I think it was actually maybe even, 1 week ago. That's right. But I thought it was such a great explanation when she was talking about the Trump bill, the tax and spend bill, where she said, look, everybody's talking about people losing their Medicaid and talking about losing SNAP. In both of these cases, you're putting, you know, an emphasis on eligibility because you're trying to cut back on the waste where you don't need to be spending. You're trying to make sure that it stays there for the future to give to these people who really need it. This is how you save these programs instead of thinking of this as some horrible anti-humanitarian thing. And I thought that was a really good explanation for it. Joining us now, Jimmy Petronis. He is our congressman for District 1, the great state of Florida. Jimmy, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. We need to send Katie Britt out to message everything.
Yeah, you know, Katie Britt, she's from Enterprise, Alabama, and she's got a lot of love for Northwest Florida simply because that's where all of Alabama comes to when they have a breaking moment to get away from the state to vacation, they come down and visit. So she's a great ally and a good friend to have.
It's surprising to me. I think there's been so little effort to really explain the SNAP and Medicaid portions of this bill from the Republican perspective. It's like the whole narrative is how it's throwing people out of food stamps and health care. And I mean, I just don't really hear much effort to explain it.
No, look, when Hakeem Jeffries decided to go on for 9 hours of gibberish so he would have his new record, I went back to the office in the middle of the night and I was just answering phones because the calls were coming in. I thought, you know what? This is a healthy thing to do. Sit down and I'll answer the phone. And there were some interns in there who would be answering the phones. And the misinformation that was being distributed by the Democrats regarding Medicaid was so far from what the real truth was. What we're trying to do is look, if you're not eligible, then you should be getting access to the benefits because there's those out there that truly need it. And this is a way we have a program that is for those who are truly eligible and entitled to use it, and it makes it more sustainable.
You know, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the military slice of this. Of course, this is a big piece that we care about, but being both a military community and also having all these bases locally. I learned something over the weekend that honestly it stunned me just because I didn't know it. I feel like over the last week, I've learned so many things I did not know. Part of what is being celebrated in this bill is a massive funding for the VA, around $400 billion. And the military funding, of course, is adding $150 billion to push up almost to a trillion, not quite to a trillion. The part that I didn't know, and I just feel ignorant that I didn't know this, is I always assumed that VA funding was within the defense budget. I had no idea that they were separate things. And because of that, you know, I mean, VA funding to me is military funding, right? It's taking care of the warriors afterwards. And so that means that Department of Defense and VA combined are like a $1.3 trillion budget.
Well, that's a lot of resources that will be making its way to Northwest Florida. But you got a secretary of the VA, so they have their own silo, their own budget, their own administration. So this is why, you've got those two different line items in the budget. But, you know, there's going to be definitely an emphasis put on community care. And you get those critics out there that, oh, we don't want more community care. We want more VA care. Well, community care is given the benefit to the veteran at the comfort of their own home, going to their own hospitals, their own physicians. We're just trying to get people from having to wait 8 months to a year to get their services. We're trying to get that wait list knocked down. So this is why, you know, the Trump administration and Secretary Combs have been so aggressive about wanting to get community care supercharged in order to get people the services they need as soon as possible.
As a theoretical philosophical, I completely agree. To me, it's like school choice vouchers. The money should follow the kid. The benefit should follow the veteran. My only concern is, and I just don't feel like I have a good enough on the ground grasp of this, is does it really work in practice? Do veterans really get the treatment? Is there enough capacity to handle the veterans who then go to the private care?
So, I mean, when I started speaking towards a hospital solution, any of a number of solutions on the campaign trail, you'd have any of a number. I had a lot of providers reach out to me and say, Jimmy, look, we've got capacity. If you will give us access to community care, we will provide the services. So you get in a fight because the Biden administration was not a big fan of community care. They liked growing the bureaucracy of the VA. And look, the VA has a lot of amazing people that work in its organization, but there's just too much demand for what that organization can provide. So let's knock down the wait list. The same thing happened in Florida years ago with the agency for with individuals with persons with disabilities. We had a wait list that was over 25,000 people deep. So we had to throw a significant amount of money at it just to get people those services so they could get back to a normal life. This is no different what we're doing with the VA.
The one thing I'm just, and pardon me, I don't know the answer to this. I love the fact that there's so much money in the bill for shipbuilding. I'm a big fan. Obviously, there's a lot of things in our military that I'm very excited about. The ongoing theme that I hear every time we talk about military funding is how bad it is to have these concurrent resolutions, to have these continuing resolutions where they never know what to budget from year to year, and how much that costs them because they can't make long-term plans. Has this bill done anything to fix that?
Yeah, so we put almost a year's worth of work, and this predated me, into the particular budget package we had. So we had, I think it was, ideally you want 12 individual budget bills. I think we were at 6 so far this go around. So where it was just to continue, just raise the credit card limit and just keep on moving. This is where Speaker Johnson is still committed on working to get to that point. You had so much pressure, though, put from the administration because the president just got off the campaign trail with no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, all the benefits for our seniors. And those are things that he wanted to deliver on. So you got the president who is just wearing us out to get it out as soon as possible. And rightly so, the sooner that we pass the bill, the sooner our citizens can realize those tax savings. Okay. So yeah, you just literally don't physically have enough time. The Democrats on one of those budget bills, they kept our members tied up for over 24 hours just making amendments to try to derail it. So this is what makes it so frustrating to try to do a 12 bill budget resolution. Is you got the Democrats that are going to use every trick in the book, and it's unfortunate. The only person that we're harming are those taxpayers that don't want to pay any tax on tips, don't want to pay tax on overtime. These are what are all tied up together ultimately at the end of the day.
And last question on all this, Jimmy, is there's $1 trillion a year deficit spending still. We raised the debt limit by $5 trillion. I mean, just these numbers are incomprehensible to most people. And if we continue to run this way, of course, we cannot continue to run this way. What's the solution? How do we solve that? How do we get that trillion a year almost deficit under control?
Well, this is where this is another thing in the first round of Trump tax cuts back in 17, 18, 19, where the CBO said, you're going to have, trillions of dollars in deficit spending. We actually had the exact opposite. We had trillions of dollars of new revenue for the country. This is the same type of business model we've used on this particular package as we did on the last one. When you give those businesses the comfort from extending the Trump tax cuts, when you give our citizens the comfort that they're not going to have more dollars in their pocket because they're not going to be going towards tips on overtime or tips tax on tips, those dollars go back into the economy. So, again, I know the scoring has forced us to take out that additional money in order to bring these tax cuts online. But I'm a big believer that, Trump was right, that these will continue to grow our economy, and you'll see a narrative that will come out to undermine the concerns of people of expanding the debt limit.
You know, switching from talking about trillions of dollars and hundreds of billions of dollars to talking about $150,000, it's been interesting to me to watch how people can really grasp a very small, very particular thing. The DeSantis vetoes, I mean, he vetoed the bleep out of Alex Andrade's budget bill. Like, I mean, he just gutted. If it had Alex's name on it and it didn't have Don Gates' name on it, it got vetoed. The one that has really caught a lot of people's attention was the $150,000 to the Santa Rosa County Veterans Treatment Court, which I think is a wonderful program. It's a very inexpensive way to help divert some veterans and help them really get, you know, what they need instead of putting them in jail, which is not a great place for them to be. But you and I were chatting a little bit before we got on the air. People have been blowing up your phone about this.
Yeah, I mean, people have been calling me regarding the veterans treatment veto. And look, I don't know why the governor vetoed that $150,000. The treatment courts have shown to truly be a good safe haven for those that need to be able to have a little bit of a different protocol, discipline, pathway in order to get themselves stable. And if they didn't have such a good track record, I can understand the governor vetoing it. But, you know, folks, as I say, when the governor vetoes money, it stinks, but it's gone. Okay, the only way that money is coming back is the legislature has to reconvene. They have to take that particular budget item up, and they have to have enough votes, a two-thirds majority of both chambers, to then override the governor's veto. There may be an appetite to look at that if the legislature decides to reconvene. I think the veterans treatment idea was a good one, but I would, if I were you, I would demand to know why it was vetoed. I don't know if there was actually a veto letter attached to that particular line item by the governor, but you know, the governor's office does make screw ups. They may have literally been fixated on the name Andrade and not really looked at what the subject matter was. There's a possibility. I hope that wasn't the case, and it probably wasn't the case. But you need to definitely let the governor's office know how important that line item was. It was $150,000 out of a multi-billion-dollar budget. It's not a significant amount of money.
It's a thousandth? No, it's a millionth. I think of the budget. It's some crazy teeny tiny slice of the budget. And
thimbleful.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing.
Okay, the legislature, they set money on fire, and here's one that actually has a pretty good outcome.
Yeah, you know? And as unfortunately, I hate to believe it, but I do believe it. It's because the governor is angry at Alex for raising the questions he raised about the Hope Florida Foundation, and you know he thinks this is payback. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not hurting Alex. He's not up for reelection. It's hurting the veterans in Santa Rosa County who aren't getting the treatment, and that's why it's completely inexplicable. Jimmy, talking again to Jimmy Patronis, our congressman, I did want to give you a minute to talk about what's going on in Texas. I mean, horrible tragedy, of course. I mean, awful, but it also raises, you know, questions about FEMA and who should be running the response and all of this. But, you know, carte blanche, your chance to talk. What do you want to say?
Yeah, so Florida's already sent crews over there. We'll basically send our urban search and rescue teams that have Zodiacs. And it's amazing the type of work those men and women do once they hit the ground running. These massive rain systems, the flooding takes place for days. So it's not as bad the day the rain hits. It's worse days after the rain has passed because all the water has to go to a lower elevation and it creates a flood event. But over 80 people right now, the count was of this morning, that have lost their lives. And 28 of those were kids. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. There was a camp there in harm's way. FEMA's going to be more and more, at least in my opinion, in the future. It's going to be simply just a resource provider. The states are going to have to start to be a little more aggressive in their infrastructure build out and regarding to the response. And the federal government will cut the check. What we'll have to determine is what the federal government cuts the check for. The states, to me, are just going to be more nimble to respond to a disaster, because when something like this happens, FEMA does what they have to go hire people.
Right.
And a lot of times the people that they go hire are not, you know, experiencing disasters. They're just warm bodies to answer people's questions or help people process forms. It's a challenge as we see these disasters start to become more impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, saw all the inefficiencies that go along with FEMA, the delays, the double, triple, fourth time, quadruple checking to prevent fraud, which I understand, but also it just gets in the way of the response at the same time. It's kind of the all of it. Jimmy Patronis, he is our congressman from District 1. Congressman, thank you so much for the time. As always, we'll look forward to talking to you again next week, sir.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.